Good morning. Today's reading is taken from Hindu Holiday by J.R. Ackerley, beginning at part one. Chakrapur has no railway station. The nearest is at Deepra, 35 miles away, and there the Maharaja's car was waiting for me. It was manned by a very fat chauffeur and a small boy. With me was a black-bearded Mohammedan, servant to His Highness, who had met me at an earlier stage in my journey with a letter of instructions. We drove off, passing about midway through Rajgarh, the nearest British cantonment to Chakrapur, and residence of the political agent. A sudden turn from the main road, which seemed to skirt the town, brought us through white gates up to a long red gravel drive onto this small, conical hill. The hill is flattened at the top to form a plateau, and is appended, like the full stop in an exclamation mark, to a long rocky ridge, which rises in a gradual incline to the south. There are two houses on the plateau, one big and one small, and I was set down in front of the latter. This was to be my abode for some months, so as soon as I arrived, I made a tour of inspection. It did not take long. I found an oblong, one-storied building with thick walls whitewashed inside and out. There were two communicating rooms, two verandas, one in front and the other behind, and an outhouse bathroom in the corner of the back porch, from which stone steps led down to a small walled courtyard at the foot of the stony ridge. There were no windows, but five doorways, one from each room to each veranda, and one between the rooms. The house was simply furnished. Canvas carpets, striped blue and red, covered both the floors, and across the thresholds of the open doorways, long linen curtains of a rose pattern floated in the breeze. A round table and three chairs completed the sitting room. In the other was a gigantic iron bedstead and a small table with a mirror on it. The outhouse contained a bathtub on a wooden platform, some large earthenware water vessels, a pot, a close stool, and a washstand. The washstand contained a little water and a drowned mouse. As I was washing, I heard a pattering behind me and perceived through soap suds St. Peter hurriedly returning. "Maharaja Sahib, Maharaja Sahib," he whispered excitingly, pointing behind him to my sitting room. This was very upsetting. I had spent several months in corresponding and arranging this meeting with His Highness. I had travelled over 6,000 miles to accomplish it. He might at least have managed better than to catch me in this state of unreadiness. He wasn't playing up. "Ask him to wait," I said, with economy of words and effect, and hurrying into the bedroom, I had just time to dry my face and restore my collar and tie, when a shadow fell across the threshold of the sitting room, and a stout Indian of unpleasing aspect, in a black frock coat, entered and drew aside the curtains for His Highness to pass. I had been given a detailed description of the Maharaja, but found myself unprepared nevertheless for the curious figure which now hobbled into the room. His face, with its bridgeless nose, sunken lips, prominent chin, and protuberant brown eyes, over which a faint bluish film had formed, bore a strong resemblance to a Pekingese dog. Halfway down the collapsed bridge of his nose, from the centre of his forehead, trickled some spots of yellow paint. A diamond shone in the lobe of each ear, and from beneath the front of his little round hat, which was made of green velvet and gold brocade, a wisp of dark grey hair upcurled. He was small and very slight, and his stiff-jointed body was neatly sheathed in a long-skirted coat of violet and grey tweed, with a high military collar of grey velveteen and cuffs of the same material. His trousers were of white cotton, wrinkling tightly down the lower half of his leg, but expanding above the knee. His socks were bright purple, and upon his long, thin feet he wore a pair of patent leather dancing pumps. I took in these details slowly. "His Highness the Maharaja Sahib," announced the stout person pompously. Carrying my coat with me, I hastened forward and shook his hands, apologising for my condition, but he took no notice of this. "But you were so early," he said. "I did not expect you for another hour, for I intended to come part of the way to meet you, but just as I was thinking of starting, they brought you my card." He seemed quite vexed about it, and, turning to his companion, uttered some brief remarks in Hindi which caused the other to pass a nervous hand over his jaw and mouth. But immediately he returned to me with, "Welcome to India," and introduced his companion as Mr. Babaji Rao, his private secretary. Here ends the reading. Have a very good day.